Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Supreme Court's Oddball Playlist. Freedom of speech. Citing the principle of money equals speech, the Supreme Court opens the floodgates for corporate money into political campaigns. I guess then more money equals more speech.
So it's just going to be more money overall for everybody. And more painful 30-second sound bites for all the public to have to endure.
A stimulus package for political campaigns, because corporations are people too. Freedom of speech. The court speaks on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning, everyone. It's Friday, January 22nd, and The Takeaway is money does equal speech, according to the Supreme Court, and we'll be dealing with it in the 2010 campaign. I'm here with Miles O'Brien in for Celeste Headlee. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning, John. Nobody paid me to say that.
That's good. And Celeste will be back on Monday.
Yes, she will. Right. And I'll be sleeping in. Let's get right to the top stories we're following this morning. As we've been talking about, the Supreme Court yesterday struck down a century-old restriction on corporations using their money in elections. A 5-4 decision says big business and labor unions have the same First Amendment rights as individuals. The Brookings Institution, Darrell West, says it opens the door to corporate America to start advertising candidates, much as they market products.
We will see an arms race of campaign spending in upcoming elections.
White House spokesman Robert Gibbs condemned the high court decision.
I don't think anybody thinks that we spend too little money on political commercials and on political campaigns.
Disclosure rules remain intact, so an outside group paying for a campaign commercial will have to include a statement taking responsibility.
For more, let's talk with Dahlia Lithwick, senior editor and senior legal correspondent for Slate.com. Good morning, Dahlia.
Good morning.
So campaign finance reform is something of a joke, it seems to me, as long as there is this principle that money equals speech and that's inviolate. Is that what this is all about?
Well, there's always been a lurking principle, at least for a while now, that money equals speech and that corporate money equals speech. What the court really did was take off all restraints on that speech. In other words, it used to be that even though the court generally accepted that money was speech, you could regulate it some for greater interests of political fairness. Those days are over. From here on in, according to Justice Kennedy's 5-4 opinion, all bets are off and speech is good.
Well, we'll be talking about the implications of this decision for the rest of our program and also probably far into the future. Dahlia Lithwick, senior editor and senior legal correspondent for Slate.com. President Obama took on Wall Street yesterday, calling for tougher regulations that would limit the size of banks and limit their ability to engage in high-risk trades.
If these folks want a fight, it's a fight I'm ready to have. And my resolve is only strengthened when I see a return to old practices at some of the very firms fighting reform.
The president's plan would also stop banks from making investments that are not meant to benefit customers. The markets absolutely was thrilled by all of this. The Dow Jones lost 213 points yesterday. The decision to confront Wall Street's big banks comes at a time when President Obama is shifting his focus to jobs.
You can expect a continued, sustained, and relentless effort to create good jobs for the American people. I will not rest until we've gotten there.
Obama's focus for the past several months has been passing a health care reform bill, which now looks more difficult after this week's election in Massachusetts.
Asian and European markets are down. Futures are up. The Dow gets underway at 10,389. The S&P opens at 1,116. NASDAQ at 2,265.
So coming up in this hour, we're going to talk movies like we do every Friday and look at the first day of the Sundance Film Festival. That's later in the show. We'll have a couple of directors here. And with the Supreme Court's decision that money is speech, we're talking with all of you this morning. How do you view campaign cash? Is it political expression or a tool for corruption? The court essentially said that corporations are people. They have freedom of speech rights, so therefore their money equals speech. Do you buy that? Tell us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or on our website, thetakeaway.org. Coming up, more of my conversation with Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen. He's going to talk about the Haitian relief effort in just a few moments.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
and Miles O'Brien. Miles, it's been great having you here this week.
It's been a good week. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, Celeste will be back on Monday. And during my 2 days down in Washington, you'll recall I was out of here for a while.
In the midst
of the political crisis created by that special Senate race up in Massachusetts, and there were all kinds of typical briefings and meetings on the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, it was the relief effort in Haiti that had the highest profile at the White House. Government agencies from Health and Human Services to USAID to the Pentagon were rapidly mobilizing. And it's estimated there are close to 16,000 U.S. troops there right now as part of the effort. In part two of our interview with Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, we talked about the challenges in Haiti, and especially in opening up that logjam at the damaged airport in Port-au-Prince.
Well, when we went in there initially, we really brought the enabling capability to make the airport 24/7 capable. Since that time, we've worked very hard with the Haitian government to essentially put ourselves in a position to run the airport. And we've increased the throughput several fold. I just actually literally got off the phone with General Frazier, who's the commander at Southcom. He went down there yesterday, and one of the first things he mentioned was what a tremendous operation the airport is in terms of what it's doing right now. And as the principal place to get stuff into Haiti initially, the only place we could do that, that's been really important.
How much has that impressive throughput and increase of capacity there at the airport due to the forces really having to hold territory and control that airport because, of course, the tower was damaged?
Well, it wasn't really tied to holding territory per se. Certainly, security there has been important, but I've received no input that there's been any kind of incidents in the vicinity of the airport or any kind of serious instance at all. So what was really key was getting in there and enabling it. And we knew this right away as rapidly as we could. What the challenge has been, because it has been the principal place where all the relief comes in, has been prioritizing it. And then after the prioritization and arrival, is distributing it, which is where we are right now in the overall task.
How does what appears to be U.S. control of the airport at Port-au-Prince conflate with the idea that the Haitians are in control of their own destiny right now? We've heard reports that the police are essentially AWOL in a lot of the urban areas and that the responsibility of the government is very, very difficult to discern right now.
Well, we've worked with the Haitian leadership from the beginning. I mean, we are there in support of the Haitian leadership. Overall, the UN in terms of the relief efforts and in particular the UN security forces supporting them from a security standpoint. But our main effort, our main focus, main goal is to provide this relief and provide security for the relief effort. So as we've approached this and recognize we're a big footprint, and I understand all that, the intent is from, and certainly from the military standpoint, the intent is to focus on this kind of assistance in support of these organizations, including the Haitian government, to relieve the really destitute situation in so many places as rapidly as we can. We also, the U.S. military is not the lead, even in our own country. It's USAID, so we're working very closely in support of USAID as well.
That's Admiral Michael Mullen, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I spoke with him Wednesday at the Pentagon, and we went on to discuss the capabilities of the Haitian government, a tough situation for that government in this time of critical need.
I'm not aware of the impact that the difficulties the Haitian government has had in standing up. I mean, and it was in great part decapitated by this. They lost a lot of senior people. They also lost a lot of ministries. So it's in its own way trying to stand back up as well. So I haven't seen them impeding progress here. We certainly are in touch with them about what's going on. And again, there's a big international medical effort right now. And as literally as we speak, a little more than a week after the earthquake, while we still have a long way to go with food, a long way to go with water, a great emphasis right now is being placed on getting the medical help out there. The The Navy ship, United States Navy ship Comfort, showed up today that has a capacity for 1,000 beds. And we hope that that will assist. There's been an offer of another hospital ship as well. So, but there are clear challenges, significant challenges, that remain on the medical side that we're really trying to break through.
You know, we've talked with lots and lots of Haitians over the last week or more. And to a person, they tell us, we don't trust the Haitian government. We don't know who to trust inside Haiti for the relief that we need and for our faith in the future of our country.
Right.
Can you tell the Haitian people at this point, at this stage of the relief operation, who they can trust?
Well, I have great confidence in the leadership of the United Nations, the senior representatives that are there. I have great confidence in certainly the leadership in USAID and our military leadership and other leaders from many other countries. We are, as I indicated, we are there working very closely to support the Haitian government. And they are a very important part of all this. Again, they've been very badly, almost decapitated. And so I think it's, you know, it's going to take them a while to stand back up. What I guess what I'd say to the Haitian people is there is no one that I know, from their government through all the support agencies, including those from America and many countries around the world, that don't want to do anything else than help them. Certainly in the near term, get this relief done, ease this burden, which has been so tough on them because of this tragedy. All of us, there isn't a moment in any of this that myself and many others don't think about all of the people who've died in this, and that just the epic tragedy that this is, and we want to try to relieve that. And I know everyone, including the Haitian government leadership, wants to do that as well.
Hopes and challenges in the Haitian relief effort. That was Admiral Michael Mullen, chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, speaking with me at the Pentagon this week. You can see a video of our entire interview on the website, takeaway.org. At 15 minutes after the hour, let's check in on the headlines that we're following.
The president chastised big Wall Street banks yesterday, urgently calling for limits on their size and investments.
The American people will not be served by a financial system that comprises just a few massive firms. That's not good for consumers. It's not good for the economy.
The president said new regulation is imperative to avoid another economic meltdown. Investors responded by dumping bank stocks. We'll get more details from New York Times finance reporter Louise Story in just a few minutes.
I can't wait to ask her about this.
Yeah, she should have some insights for us, I think. A big win for business. That's thanks to a decision by a bitterly divided Supreme Court. The 5-4 ruling lets big businesses and unions and just rich people spend millions to directly sway presidential and congressional elections. Darrell West from the Brookings Institution explains the ruling.
It doesn't affect candidates so directly because it doesn't relate to money that you would give to a candidate, but it does allow corporations to spend an unlimited amount of money on behalf of candidates that they support.
As a side consequence, the election season blizzard of ads is bound to increase.
Moving to the Caribbean, Haitians living in the U.S. began applying for a government program that allows some immigrants to remain in the country and get work permits. Under the Temporary Protected Status Program called TPS, eligible participants can work here and send money back home. Toyota announced it's recalling 2.3 million vehicles to fix sticky accelerators, causing the cars to rev at extremely high speeds. That's a look at some of the stories we're watching this morning. Coming up, the president talks about restrictions on banks. The markets react downwardly.
Thanks for listening to the Takeaway Podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.